Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go hook him up!
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Tired of laying in the sunshine, staying home to watch the rain.
And I still have no idea what you're talking about, but I would introduce our other co-host, but apparently he's running late or something, because he's yet to appear on the switchboard. And you cut it kind of close there yourself there. Oh, here's our other co-host on the line. Katrina, what's going on, Katrina?
Nothing. Sorry, I had onion rings in the oven.
In the oven? Wouldn't you, like, fry them?
No.
Oh. Well, I don't know what kind of onion rings you're eating, but...
They come in a bag. They're in the freezer section of your local grocery store.
Oh, I thought you were making, like, homemade ones.
No. Shit, no, we ain't got time for that. Busy man.
Well, anyway, before we get started with our show, I guess we should take a minute here to thank our wide variety of listeners from all over the world who helped make this past show our highest downloaded show that we've ever done, guest or no guest. And it did cause me to have a heavy heart today because I had to. Sadly, I had to break the news to Trina Michael that she's no longer the number one downloaded guest on the show. And, I guess she would still be the number one downloaded guest, but no longer the number one show. So that kind of hurt me to have to do that to her. But I made it up to her. She might actually be my date at WrestleMania. So, you know, it's all good. Everything's taken care of. But yeah, I just want to thank everybody because we just blasted our old record. And, our listeners are as high as they've ever been, and I think that's pretty cool. And,
And why did you insult the callers on the board?
Well, because the callers suck, dude. I'm sorry, dude. Our callers suck.
All two of them?
Yeah. Yeah, Alex and the other guy who called that Storm.
Landstorm?
Right? Did you forget about the guy who called Landstorm?
Oh, yeah.
He caused you to get off the line.
It was 2012. We're in 2013.
I don't think
you've
had a
call
in 2013.
Just got to know how to handle the listeners, Ed.
I just thanked them all, Craig. You haven't even thanked them yet. Don't you have anything to say to our listeners?
Yes, I apologize for Ed Laredo and his antics.
My antics got his record-breaking numbers, dude. Atrera, do you have anything you'd like to say to our listeners?
Yeah, thanks for listening. Keep it up.
Okay. Awesome. And the show we did last week was we started our road to WrestleMania, which basically it's kind of cool because it's a subject that, it's going to keep us busy until WrestleMania itself, and it's also a subject where we can be lazy and we don't have to really think of anything.
And so, it's a fun subject because I like running all these old shows down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very easy.
Did you guys see the list I sent y'all a couple days ago?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm looking for mine right now.
Okay.
And there it is.
Now, Ed, I had some trivia for you. Of course, every week when you introduce me, I always come back. I always fire back with some musical lyrics. And today, I fired back with some Pink Floyd. In fact, I fired back with the song "Time" by Pink Floyd's "Dark Side of the Moon." And little known fact is today, as we speak, is the 40th anniversary of Dark Side of the Moon.
The 40th? God damn, that makes me feel old.
Yeah, you're old.
Right? I was one when that thing came out. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So there's your music trivia for the show.
That's actually pretty cool. Did you see, there was like some, like, I don't know if it was like some big-ass, like, peace concert or what the deal was, But Roger Waters had got back with Pink Floyd and they performed on the show. And,
Yeah,
I thought that was so freaking cool, man. I sat there with the TV cranked and my bong in my hand and jammed out like never before, man. That was awesome.
Let's be honest. You would have sat in the chair with the bong in your hand if the concert was on or not.
Yeah. It could have been Justin Bieber and I still would have had my bong there.
Yeah.
I really would have needed it for that one. But I guess we can go ahead and get started on the subject. Like last week, we covered WrestleMania 1, 2, 3. And this week, we're going to try and cover WrestleMania 4, 5, and 6. And does anyone else besides me get confused when you just see, like, let's say WrestleMania 4, but you have those Roman numerals and you, like, have no fucking idea what WrestleMania it is?
No, I don't have that problem at all.
No,
I'm the only person that doesn't know how to read.
I went to
Roman
school.
Numerals.
I know Roman numerals.
Sure, hold on, just for a second, Katrina. Say what the thing is behind the WrestleMania again. What's it called?
The what?
The Roman numerals. I don't know.
Roman numerals.
Thank you.
My Mexican tongue kind of excuse me sometimes.
Yeah.
I went to school. I passed the sixth grade, so I know my Roman numerals.
Uh-huh.
And do you know your romaine noodles, though?
My romaine noodles? Yeah, I lived on that shit in college. That's what kept me going.
Yeah.
15 cents a package.
10 for 10. And 10 for a dollar at the Walmart.
Yeah, but I guess we can go ahead and get started. And so, who wants to start us off with WrestleMania 4? Contreras or Craig?
I'll go ahead. WrestleMania 4 was March 27th, 1988. It was held in Atlantic City, New Jersey, at the Trump Plaza, and this was actually the only time WrestleMania was actually shown in the same city 2 years in a row, that being 4 and 5. And it drew 175,000 is what it says.
Shown on closed circuit TV, it drew 175,000 or $2,300,000. And the arena was 18,165 and drew 1,400,000. And shown live on pay-per-view and 6.5 buy rate, is that true? It must have been different back then, I don't know.
It's got to be something different. Maybe that's the score that they gave the overall WrestleMania. I'm just kidding. The first match was a Battle Royal, and this was
real quick, I want to say,
but
I like this show. I mean, people crap on it, but when I saw it, I was at a time when, like, I wasn't judging. I was, like, 12 years old and wasn't judging shit on, like, crowd heat or fans or stuff like that. So, I don't know. I like the show. I didn't have a problem. There really weren't that many. I mean, there weren't any standout matches, but still, I enjoyed the show.
Well, this is, like I was saying last week, this is like the example of a show where, except for like the main two or three matches, nothing had anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the undercard was so weird back then because they just threw matches together. I mean, some of them
were good.
Well, I mean,
all the undercard matches had something behind them. There was an issue between all the guys.
Well, like, I really don't remember, but, I mean, I just remember they used to have, like, a lot of mismatches, you know?
I remember, I mean, like, Ultimate Warrior and Hercules. Remember when they broke the chain in the ring in that one TV show?
Oh, yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, and, you know, they had Bobby Heenan and the Islanders, and they kidnapped Matilda. So they got the Bulldog and Coco and a six-man, stuff like that.
Well, I guess this is maybe this is the one where they started gearing more to actually promoting a whole card, because like 1-3, that, you know, they did have those, you know, matches that didn't mean anything. But
yeah. A lot of these were tournament matches too, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the first match was a battle royal, and it was won by a man that I've been in the ring with, and an awesome man, an awesome storyteller, Bad News Brown.
You actually wrestled Bad News Brown?
I didn't actually wrestle him. I was in a battle royal with him, and I also what the heck was? Oh, I got in a brawl, not with him, but we were lumberjacks, and Bad News was on the heel side, and I was on the babyface side, and I actually got to take a punch from Bad News Brown.
Did you hide from him in the battle royal?
No, I sat in the corner and giggled, because that's what you do in a battle royal. You just laugh at everybody. And
this is the same battle royal where Brian got pants, is it?
No, it wasn't the same one. This one was, I want to say it was in the States. The infamous pantsing of one Brian Alvarez was in Cloverdale, B.C.
Where Bad News, he take Bret Hart from behind to start the little feud, and Bret became a babyface. I gave this match 1 star just because he broke the trophy.
Yes, he smashed the trophy to bits. Plastic gold parts flying everywhere.
And it was a great ending together too. So
it was a great ending because, I mean, it worked with what Bad News is. He had that, like, kind of like standing in the jury kind of thing, and he just kicked him in the back of the head.
The ghetto blaster.
Ghetto blaster, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he eliminated Bret, and then Bret, this is basically, wasn't this Bret, this is his babyface turn, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or was he already being babyface?
No, this was babyface turn.
Okay, yeah.
Second time in a WrestleMania, Bret Hart has lasted till number 2 in the battle royal and gotten dumped out. Yeah. Second match sounds really awesome if it was earlier and they weren't in WWE. Ted DiBiase pinned Hacksaw Jim Duggan in 4 minutes and 54 seconds.
Yeah, this was the first match of the first round of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the tournament was to crown a new WWF champion.
That's right, because Andre had beaten Hogan. In that great live moment, he said, "I surrender the tag team titles to Ted DiBiase."
That's right.
And that,
not the world
champion. I still think that's like the highest rated wrestling show of all time on that NBC show.
Saturday night's main event, right?
No, it was the main event, the Friday night show.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Match number 3 was Don Morocco.
Well, I was going to say you're right about it. Had it been about 3 years sooner, and luckily I've actually seen the match non-WWF between DiBiase and Duggan, and they were pretty good, but this one wasn't. Mm-hmm. I can't even say this was half of what they used to do.
Right.
They had the strangest match, and this is actually back in Mid-South, and you'd think that Vince Russo had booked this. They had, like, a tuxedo match inside of a steel cage, and it was also a coal miner's glove match, all rolled into one.
Oh, my.
Sounded like something Vince Russo booked.
You know, I always was told, in wrestling, you keep things very simple, because sometimes wrestling fans are very simple.
Well, that's why they did tuxedo match, because you don't have to explain much, tear the clothes off.
Sure. And a cage match is self-explanatory, but then you roll up all three at once, and anyway.
Well, what's his name? What's like to have crazy cage matches? I mean, you had this one, and then you had the barbed wire cage that looked like they could have broken through that thing and killed themselves at any time.
Yeah.
Or a bar cage looked like I built.
Yeah.
I built it.
It was just a step above Jim Cornette's Smoky Mountain cage, which was basically 2x4s and chicken wire.
Maybe he jumped in the dumpster and captured it, like when UWF went out of business, like he did those Mid-Atlantic tapes when they were getting ready to throw them out. He jumped in the dumpster and rescued them.
Anything to save a buck. Okay, now getting on to match number 3 was the Don Morocco beating Dino Bravo via DQ, 5 minutes and 53 seconds. Dyslexia.
The Rock, Don Morocco.
The Rock, Don Morocco. The original Rock.
You know what's funny about this match is, like we just mentioned, go back a few years with DiBiase and Jim Duggan. You go back a few more years with these guys, and you have two guys who are like Adrian Adonis style, where they're just flabby belly, beer belly wrestlers who were actually awesome. Well, supposedly Dino Bravo was awesome, according to the aftermath. Okay, Don Morocco was. I saw some of him in Georgia when he was a beach bum. But you had two guys who, you know, didn't really care about their physique, and then they went to WWE, and they both got on the juice hardcore and just totally changed their physiques. And they weren't like Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilders, but goddamn, they were fucking huge.
Mm-hmm. Large, large men and thick. Both of them. Just, anyway.
I just remember Morocco's veins, all the veins that were popping out of Morocco.
Yeah.
Okay, match number 4. Randy Savage pinned the natural Butch Reed 5 minutes and 7 seconds.
Yep.
Don't really remember too much of it other than Butch's blonde hair.
Just the natural. Greg Valentine pinned Ricky Steamboat, probably the best match on the show, if not.
I would say technically the best match on the show. This was weird because if you wanted a good match, wouldn't you at least let Savage get his win back from last year in the tournament for Steamboat? I mean, that's
right.
Like common sense to me. But
well, wasn't Ricky on the way out pretty much at this point?
Yeah, pretty much so.
And they were kind of pissed at him at that time, if I remember right, because I think he wanted to take time off and then something else, and they just
Remember the year before he was the Intercontinental Champion, but his wife was about to have a kid, so we wanted like 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
And Vince, and that's how Honky Tonk Man became the champion, because Vince wouldn't give him 2 weeks off because he was the champion. So he came back like here and there. I think he came back for like Survivor Series and that first Royal Rumble and stuff like that. And I remember this was when he brought his son to the ring for the first time. We saw his son, which makes me feel old when I can watch him on NXT actually doing something with his life.
Right. And Ricky Steamboat at this time would basically be like Rey Mysterio at this time. Just a real awkward kind of like relationship. You know what I mean? Like you said, he was kind of here and there and then getting in trouble just for asking for simple time off. And, you know, just he just for some reason Vince didn't like him. And, you know, imagine, I mean, Ricky had a great career going back to the NWA, but, I mean, imagine if he would have been the number one, number two guy in WWE for those years. I mean, he'd be probably more famous.
Yep.
Hmm. Oddly enough, last week when we got done with the show, went downstairs and watched Skyfall, the new Bond movie that's out on DVD and whatnot. Yeah, it was actually very good. But there was a scene where they're in, I think they're in China or the Orient of some kind. Anyway, the bad guy gets knocked into this pit, and there's a couple of kimono dragons in the pit. And my son was covering his eyes and said, "Don't worry, if wrestling has taught me anything, the kimono dragon doesn't bite." And cut to the scene of them tearing apart the man and him flailing about. And anyway.
Because when the thing was brought to the ring, they made sure that they tied his beak or his mouth closed.
Yeah.
Now he's traumatized your son for the rest of his life, Craig. I hope you know that.
Yeah.
And Simo,
what did they say? Ricky Simo brought the dragon to the ring, but it was just an alligator. I swear it was like a baby alligator.
Okay.
I think one time he had like, well, because little dragons are supposed to be pretty, like, if they bite you or scratch you, they can really make you sick. So, I mean,
the kimono dragon, that's when he came. That was like in that one match with Luger in WCW. I think he had like a baby alligator in WWF when he was doing the stuff with Jake the Snake.
Skinner should have brought the alligator to the ring.
you mentioned 007, and I used to be a big fan of 007 movies, especially the old ones. But then there was the one, I don't even remember who was a James Bond at the time, but there was one where they're fighting on this, like, base that's on a mountain, and a plane goes flying off the ledge and is dive-bombing down, and then James Bond, like, 5 minutes later, jumps over the thing, and somehow he skyrockets down into the plane where he takes control of the plane and saves it. And that scene was just so fucking bullshit that I just, like, turned me off from James Bond since then, and I don't think I've seen a James Bond movie since.
Sounds like every Bond movie ever.
Yeah.
No, dude, that was like the first when they started going to CG and they just didn't make, I don't know, I was just like, man, fuck this.
Well, check this one out. It's pretty good. The sixth match on the card, and this sounds like a doozy. The one-man gang beat Bam Bam Bigelow again. Rewind the clock about 4 or 5 years. 2 minutes, 56 seconds via countout.
This match pissed me off.
Why did it piss you off?
Because, you know, in the rule book, I say the wrestling rule book, like when the guy's on the outside and he's being counted out, if the guy in the ring comes and starts, like, messing with the referee, he's supposed to stop the match, you know, stop the count and start over, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Bam Bam got up to he finally got back up on the apron. The referee's counting. One Man Gang is inside the ring. He's still pounding on him, and the referee's still counting, and that's how he got counted out. That made me so mad.
Right.
I don't remember that, but... but, you're talking about two giant dudes. The One Man Gang, I mean, I've seen the One Man Gang, I can't even tell you how many years. Back from... I'm sure this is before you were watching Contreras, but wasn't the One Man Gang involved in the trade with Ricky Steamboat?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm trying to remember from where.
Thinking Georgia had a part.
I know Mid Atlantic got Ricky Steamboat, and I can't remember who got One Man Gang, but they got screwed.
It was either Georgia or Mid South. It might have been Mid South.
Yeah. I don't think he was One Man Gang then.
He wasn't the biker. They were starting to call him the One Man Gang, but he wasn't the biker. He still had like hair, from what I remember.
Hmm.
They used to call Ronnie Garvin the One Man Gang.
Yeah, that's right.
Before he was a rugged.
The first time I saw the One Man Gang, I was probably 12 or so, and I was watching wrestling up in my room on my little black and white TV, had the covers over myself and the TV because, I was supposed to be in bed. And it was the only time the UWF was on, and the One Man Gang was wrestling Hacksaw Jim Duggan in one of those crappy cage matches, crappy cages. The match itself was pretty intense. That's the first time I saw the gang.
And then it probably went off the air before it finished.
It sure did. I think that's the way they ended every show.
Just about.
Hated that shit.
They got an hour and they just put the main event at the start of the show. You know, me being young and stupid, I don't know about promotion and how they want to draw people to the arenas and stuff like that. I said, why can't they just put it on at the beginning so we can get a finish?
I know, right? Except for there was that one show that had like three or four finishes and that was it. And then all the other ones went back. They went back to the way they usually did. I used to hate that shit. It pissed me off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching Worldwide Wrestling and there's like 3 minutes left in the show and they just now started a Dusty Rhodes and Nikita Koloff against like Arn Anderson, Ric Flair double bull rope match. I said, you fuckers.
I know, right? But One Man Gang also has to have at the very least top three ring entrance music of all time when he was a king, the African Dream.
Yes.
Oh,
I like the King. The King was awesome. I'm sorry. It was funny.
I love that one. I don't know who made it. I forgot who made it, but there's like one of the original first Photoshops on the board was they Photoshopped me as a King the African Dream.
Mm-hmm. A fine shop job there.
Yeah.
Okay, match number 7, the Battle of the Drug Addicts. Rick Rude drew Jake the Snake Roberts at the 15-minute mark.
Was this when they were fighting over Jake's wife?
No, this was like right before that angle happened, like after WrestleMania. So, that was one of the great angles of all time, I thought.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
I think everybody in the audience, he picked Jake's wife, and she was hot too. Shit.
Hey, Katrina, did you ever see any Rick Rude when he was still like a jobber?
No, you mean like in Mid-South? I think he's a jobber in Mid-South or something like that. I never saw any of that stuff.
He was he wrestled as a jobber a little bit in Georgia and a couple matches in World Class. Like, he just kind of, like, passed through World Class. But, yeah, I remember him. I think he lost to Mr. Ebony, who's Tom Jones, who apparently is, like, really sick right now or something. But, yeah, I mean, it was an amazing scene. Like, because I used to, like, when I did see him lose those matches, I'm looking at this guy, I'm like, God damn, this dude's put together. You think he'd be winning, you know? He should be doing better. And then...
After the show, it's not unusual, just out of respect for Mr. Jones.
I see what you did there.
Waiting for somebody to bite. Come on.
Okay. Number 8, the Ultimate Warrior pinned Hercules 4 minutes 29 seconds.
A double pin finish. I would never trust the Ultimate Warrior with a double pin finish.
No.
Hercules gave him the belly to back suplex and he got the shoulder up. So, God, he was so horrible. Ultimate Warrior.
Don't say.
Yeah, I got to see like maybe a couple matches with him and Sting as the Blade Runners. And they were impressive looking, but yeah, they kind of sucked. And then he went to World Class and he was the Dingo Warrior. And he was so horrible, but he was just so jacked and just looked so freaking. He looked like a star. I mean, even like in World Class, I was like, I knew he would become a star, even though he was as bad as he was. And then, you know, as much as he gets maligned and made fun of, so there was a couple years where the Ultimate Warrior was the coolest thing in wrestling.
True.
Hey, if you can get to where he got on his. And the ability he had, I guess, you know, we're gonna be good for him.
Yeah. I think he's going to be at the WrestleCon this year.
Yeah, it's like $150 to get an autograph and a picture.
Wow. I would spend like $150 if he would like cut a promo on me. I don't need his autograph that bad.
Just go up and start talking politics. I could bet he cut a promo on you. ask him about if queering is making this world work or something like that. Ask him that.
I'll never forget that clip. That was fucking hilarious.
They should put, you know, Hogan's going to be there too. They should have Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior have like a face off and then and do their WrestleMania 6, was it 6?
The rubber match.
Yeah. Do the face to face then and now.
Sure.
You know
the Halloween Havoc match.
I think basically the way they're doing it is Hogan, Warrior, and then like Sting, and I think they're just going to be in a private room, so they're not even going to be like on the floor or whatever. And they're only selling limited number of tickets for like Hogan's. I know he sold out his. Hogan's for sure was like 150. I mean, Warrior might be a little less, but then you could get the VIP thing for Hogan, which was like cut to the line, which there were 28 of these that they sold. So how are you getting cut to the line, the front of the line, when there's 28, you know, people?
they do a rock,
like,
paper, scissors tournament for the
28. Right, that's like WrestleMania having like 5 main events, you know. So $500, you could get cut to the line and get 5 autographs and a picture and so on. So that's Hogan.
That's going to be crazy at that time. They got so much shit going on in New York that weekend. I don't know how many shows are going on. I guess you're just going to the ROH show, I guess.
I'm going to ROH on Friday, which is, well, there's like a few shows on Friday, but I'm going to ROH. Saturday, got second row for Shimmer, so I better get name dropped on the iPay-per-view, Dave Frazek, and... then the plans to go to Chikara and then the Hall of Fame and then this WrestleMania on Sunday. But if I don't run into Trina on Saturday, I might just go drop by the Dragon's Gate show just to check her out.
I would be surprised if you didn't run into somebody involved in the wrestling business on this weekend.
Oh, I plan on running into, like, just like last year, out of the blue, like we ran into, who was the guy on the food stamps?
Oh, Jesse Neal?
Jesse Neal. Like, Jesse Neal and somebody else and...
Gary Smith.
Then we were at $5 Wrestling, and I hear, like, two girls being very bitchy and catty with each other, and I turn around, and it's Shelly Martinez and some other shit kind of getting into it right behind me. And, it's amazing what you see. We thought we saw some Mark wearing an El Generico mask, and then we saw him later. We're like, hey, the El Generico Mark bought some pizza, and then then at the $5 Wrestling, Colt Cabana introduces El Generico, who comes out with a box of pizza.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
And Sir Highlight hooks up, like in Atlanta, he hooks up a bunch of the guys going to, like, the reunion show. So I wouldn't be surprised if the freaking Iron Sheik's staying at our hotel.
Ed and the Iron Sheik. I can only imagine.
Iron Sheik was in our hotel in Atlanta, and I never ran across him. That's just, man. I almost wanted to just hang out at the elevator all day long.
Just loiter. Loiter outside around the hotel all day.
In the ninth match on the card, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant went to a double countout. Double DQ, 5 minutes and 22 seconds.
This was the first match of the second round because of the controversy in the February the 5th match, they got a bye in the first round. So,
What was the double DQ? I don't even remember.
I think Andre brought in a chair, whacked Hogan. Hogan took the chair, whacked Andre, double DQ. I just remember he gave Virgil a suplex on those steps outside, and he didn't even go down, or he just tossed him over his shoulder. He didn't go down like he would on a regular suplex, and we never saw Virgil again.
By the way, Mr. Semper Vivi is questioning the trade of Steamboat for the One-Man Gang.
It happened. I know it happened. I remember hearing it on something. I don't know.
I do think I heard that maybe like on the Steamboat documentary or something like that. Or his DVD. I don't remember. But I remember there was some kind of a trade. Or
breaking
maybe
news.
This is what you do, Craig. You tell that jerk to ask Dave Meltzer the next time he does a show with Dave Meltzer.
Breaking news, Stevie J has posted that this thread says Steamboat was actually traded for Poffo.
Stevie J don't know what he's talking about. It was the one-man gang.
And now Sempervivi has posted hashtag Twitter trolling.
Oh, maybe it was Bad News. Bad News. What was it? Not Bad News, Alan, but
Bad
Brown.
Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the baddest man in the whole damn town.
Yeah. It was either one of those. That's all I know, goddammit.
Okay.
Dude, it was like 30 years ago, and I smoked like 30 years worth of pot. Give me a break, but I'm sure it was one of those two.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sempervivi. You are a kind of a hero of mine. Anyway, match 10. Ted DiBiase pinned Don Morocco 5 minutes 44 seconds.
Okay. And, you know, all these matches are like, it's like, you know, a tournament for the world title, and all the matches but one are going 5 minutes.
Yes.
It ended up being a 4-hour show.
Right.
Altogether.
Two DVD, or excuse me, two VHS tapes with Hogan in the middle.
Two laser discs. Two betas.
That's right. Okay. Randy Savage and Greg Valentine.
I was going to say, I remember Superstar Billy Graham was managing Don Morocco at this time. And WWF was employing him, so he had nice things to say.
This is when he had his hip surgery, right?
You remember he came back to, I think it was like in 87, he came back and he had had the hip surgery and tried
it
for a while.
They showed that shit on TV. That was the sickest shit I ever seen on pro wrestling, dude. They showed his thigh. Or his hip, and they show them cutting it open, dude. I was like, what the hell is this?
I think you can do that because it's kind of educational or something. I don't know.
That was gross, dude.
I remember he was like feuding with Butch Reed, and God, he's horrible. And then they did the thing where one man gang, like 747, did his hip, and so he had to retire.
Yeah. And it was,
I remember
he
did promos
like,
with a tarantula on his head.
And by the way, the One Man Gang's finishing move was a 747. If I'm in a 747 and it goes down like that, I'm not flying on that plane.
But a superstar, I mean, this is really the beginning of the end for him because then, I mean, the health problems have just been, you know, documented. I mean, the poor dude is just screwed up, you know what I mean? And it's pretty sad. And if you want to be entertained, go to YouTube, type in Superstar Billy Graham interviews, and the dude is just phenomenal. I've watched so many that they just had me rolling. They're just so hilarious. I mean, the guy was just so great. And it's just a shame to see what happened to him. And I'm probably also the only person who was, like, the only fan of the Superstar Billy Graham, Master of Karate or Kung Fu.
Oh, jeez.
This guy came
awesome,
out to everybody with Kung Fu fighting.
Yeah, that was awesome, dude. He was awesome. He threw those karate chops with steel.
Massive fighting.
Yep.
Great promos, had a good look. When the bell rang, it was over.
Okay. Let me see, where were we at? Number 11, Savage pinned Beefcake, 6 minutes, 6 seconds. Greg Valentine, my bad.
I'm sure that was a good match. At that time, that's back when Valentine was, I mean, he could still go when he got older, but I mean, you know, he never, like, looked like the physical type. I mean, like, had, like, a lot of endurance. But, I mean, he could go, and he would just beat the shit out of people. I mean, he was kind of like his dad in that way. And he always had good matches back then.
I remember watching some of those matches with he and Ronnie Garvin, like in, like, 89. They just beat the piss out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like watching a Flair Bunny Garber match where they just beat each other up.
Yeah.
And One Man Gang got a bye into the semifinals because of the double count out with the One Man Gang and Bam Bam. So.
How did that work?
Huh?
How did that work?
He won his first round. He
oh, that's right.
He won his. Something.
Why are you skipping ahead? You're confused. You're confusing me.
Well, put you in a round room until you go pee in the corner, you get confused.
One Man Gang went to the semifinals because Jake and Rick Rude hammered the draw. So,
yes.
Oh, that's right.
So, match 12, Brutus Beefcake beat the Intercontinental Champion, the Honky Tonk Man, via DQ in 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, the Peggy Sue was a ringside. Professional Sherry.
Yeah.
And this started the Beefcake Honky Tonk Man feud, and he cut Jimmy Hart's hair.
You know, Beefcake was always getting fucked out of the Intercontinental title. Like this match, he wins, but it's a DQ. Then he's supposed to win it against Kurt Hennig, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if that was a face or something else, but then Kerry gets it.
It was a parasailing accident in 1990.
Okay, the parasailing accident, he fucked it up for him, so they gave it to Kerry. And then there was another match. There was another time where he was supposed to win it, and he got injured or something happened.
Well, no, they just decided they were going to put the Ultimate Warrior, make him the champion.
Yeah, okay.
So they did the thing
where,
like, 1 week he came out because Ron Bass was beating on some poor guy, and he cut up Miss Betsy, his bullwhip. He cut it up with the shears. And so the next week it was Ron Bass
taking
him from behind, and he had his spurs, Bret and Bart the Maverick Brothers, and he cut him up.
That's right. And Ultimate Warrior was the Honky Tonk Man.
He was bleeding. They had a big X on the screen, so you couldn't see it, but you could see it.
Right. And, and then the Ultimate Warrior wins. So, like, yeah, he did have some bad luck trying to win that in the Continental Championship. Which I never liked him anyway, though.
The 13th match on the show was a match where, well, basically they had some extra time to kill it, apparently. Bobby the Brain Heenan, Haku, and Tama beat the British Bulldogs and Coco Beware.
This might have been the most entertaining match on the show.
It was. But Coco Beware and the Bulldogs, what did they have in common?
They have pits.
I see.
They had pits, and you had to have someone lower than the British Bulldogs to, you know, equate Bobby Heenan.
Somebody take the ball for Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan, so.
Okay. The logic of sound. All right.
Imagine how pissed off you would be if Bobby Heenan pinned the Dynamite Kid.
Well, that would never happen.
You remember Bobby came out in the Tag Dog's outfit or the trainer's outfit?
Yeah.
And he was.
Yeah, the Kevlar suit.
He was scared of Matilda.
Yeah.
Didn't Matilda actually, like, go at him or something? Or they try to make
him
look like
down the aisle at the end of the match or something. I always like how when they were being there against, like, say, the Hart Foundation or something, Matilda would go after Jimmy Hart and start, and they'd be tugging on the megaphone. He'd be biting the megaphone, and Jimmy trying to get it away from him. And he just runs.
Well, you know why he would chase him? Because he was roid raging, because fucking Dynamite was shooting the poor Bulldog up with fucking steroids.
The Bulldog too.
What?
Never mind.
If they would have just kept, like, just done the Islanders against the Bulldogs, this would have been the best match on the show. Haku and Tama were very good at this time, I think.
Agreed.
They were awesome. They had. I remember them having, like, an awesome, I think it was a 2 out of 3 match, but they actually won in 2 straight falls over the Young Stallions.
Yeah, they was at the Royal Rumble. The first Royal Rumble.
Yeah, they were awesome. Haku was, and that was when Haku was silk and, you know, in really, really good shape.
Yeah, Tama too. I mean, you remember the Tonga Kid, but you look at him now, he's almost like Yokozuna or somebody like that.
Right.
Dude got big.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah. The 14th match on this show. Seems like one of those UFC cards that won't ever end. Randy Savage beat the one-man gang in 4 minutes and 5 seconds via DQ.
Yep. To go into the finals against DiBiase.
That's right. And in the finals.
At the end of the match, I think he had the cane as one after Savage, and the referee caught him. And then when the gang was talking to Slick at the end of the match, and Savage snuck up to the top rope, gave him an axe handle, and he landed on top of Slick.
Awesome. We had Demolition beating Tito Santana and Rick Martel in 12 minutes, 33 seconds to win the WWF tag titles. When after was it?
Craig's favorite team.
Oh, man. But are you sure it wasn't Tom Zeke in the match instead of Rick Martel?
No.
Two years ago. Find a new joke. Randy Savage pinned Ted DiBiase in 9 minutes, 27 seconds to win the vacant WWF world title.
I remember this being a good match.
And then Hogan came out and carried him away.
Yeah, I think Andre got involved like midway through the match, and so Elizabeth left and came back with Hogan. And DiBiase had the million-dollar dream on Savage, and the referee was turned around, and he came in and cracked him with a chair. And at the win.
He was the savior. Yeah.
What about our guests, Greg?
Pardon?
The guest celebrities.
Oh. Thank God, I didn't close it. Hold on a second.
You're not looking at the You went to Wikipedia, I know it.
Well, it was in the bottom of the thing I sent you. So.
Yeah. We had our guest announcer was Bob Uecker. The guest timekeeper was Vanna White, and Gladys Knight, sans the Pips, sang the national anthem, and Robin Leach.
He was supposed to hand the title belt to the winner, but Hogan, when Savage won, grabbed it out of his hands at ringside and gave it to Savage, so wasted money.
Robin Leach from Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Yeah, I just remember he had one of the coolest voices ever.
Yeah, he was. He was from another country. Yeah.
One of the things on the show, one of the running storylines was Bob Uecker was looking for Vanna. He'd been getting all these letters, and
Novell. Yeah, all she had to do.
Because Vanna, after every round, they would go back to the brackets and. Vanna was with Gene and was, just running down who won all the matches. And said, Bob Uecker's looking for you. She said, Bob, who? And then she left. Uecker then shows up, said, I'm looking for Vanna. She said, I don't think she wants to see you, Bob. And said, well, she wrote me all kinds of letters. There's one guy named Vance White or something.
Bob was always trying to get laid. It's like every time he was on, he was trying to get laid or something.
Look at the reaction of his face when he's in the ring and they introduce Vanna White. It's like the greatest sell job I've ever seen in my life. Looks like he's about to spontaneously combust or something.
Right. Luckily for Vanna, to avoid Bob, all she had to do was turn sideways and you could see her disappear.
That's very mean, Craig. She was a very hot woman.
Very thin, frail woman. Call her what you want. All I've ever saw her do is spin letters. Anyway, WrestleMania 5, the Mega Powers explode. April 2nd, 1989, Atlantic City, New Jersey, Trump Plaza.
drawing 18,946, shown on closed circuit TV, and it says it drew 175,000. In the first match, Hercules pinned Haku, travesty of justice.
Who was introduced as King Tonga by Finkel in a rare mistake. Rockin' Robin did the national anthem. It was horrible.
Yeah, that was the... we discussed her last week. We then had Akeem and the Big Boss Man beat the Rockers 8 minutes and 2 seconds. Shawn Michaels took the highest backdrop I've ever seen in this match.
This was my favorite match on the show.
And talk about another travesty of justice.
I'll tell ya.
I really enjoyed the match. I thought they worked it well with the big guys and small guys. Some good stuff in it.
Well, Shawn Michaels was there. Come on now.
Mm-hmm. Boss Man was good. Marty Jannetty was pretty good. Akeem was there.
Yeah. Marty Jannetty's fine.
The Rockers, basically the Rockers around this period were pretty much almost stealing the show on almost every pay-per-view.
True. Yeah, they were kind of good.
They're okay.
Yeah. Brutus Beefcake, Ted DiBiase, went to a double count out in 10 minutes. Thank you for wasting my 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's when they started needed the times for the WrestleMania 4 matches and applied to that. We needed about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. 10 minutes. First match went almost 7. Second match went just over 8. And then this one went 10. You could have fit about 7 matches in this.
Well, if you think that's bad, look at the next match. You got the freaking Bushwhackers going 9 minutes.
With the Rougeaux's, nonetheless.
They gave this man a start for the Rougeaux's theme song.
I'm not singing that one. Bushwhackers beat the Rougeaux's 9 minutes, 10 seconds, when it says Williams and Raymond.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bush Williams.
Big question for everyone. Did you guys do the Bushwhacker fucking dance when they came to the ring while you were watching them on TV?
No, I'm not a window licker. I don't dance like that.
I didn't say that I did. Now, I might have, you know, if I was in the arena watching them, I'd be like, I'll show you.
I remember after the match, they went up and licked Sean Mooney.
And as we all know, we had Bushwhacker Luke on one time, and I told him that I sat by him at an ROH show, and he said, and I licked you, and you taste like sardines. I said, okay. I don't remember that, but okay, thanks. Thanks, Luke. Appreciate it. Always wanted to.
Well, you're probably right about the sardine part.
Well, it was humid there in Florida. Kind of sweaty. Anyway, match number 5. Mr. Perfect pinned the Blue Blazer. God rest his soul. 5 minutes, 38 seconds.
See, this is where you need the time for the Beefcake match. It should have switched times here.
Absolutely.
And it was an awesome 5 minutes. And
yep.
I just remember the Blazer was being pushed kind of somewhat on TV and so-and-so, and then all of a sudden he kind of ends up, it was basically a glorified jobbers match, really. I mean, Owen was awesome doing his part, but, I mean, that's basically what it was. And then it was like, you know, and he didn't last too long after that, I don't think.
This reminds me, I was at a house show, actually it was Monday Night Raw. At a Monday Night Raw during the Attitude Era. It was in the Tacoma Dome. And the Blue Blazer came out, and there was a large black man sitting a section over from me. And when he saw the Blue Blazer, he jumped up out of his seat. He had a big marijuana leaf on his shirt, and he held up the sign that said, I am the Green Blazer.
Okay.
It was very very proud of the fact that he smoked marijuana.
And then you tried to find another seat.
That was an amazing show because it was, like I said, it was during the Attitude Era, and there weren't a ton of kids there, but I did see two lesbian women get in a fist fight, so that was pretty awesome. And I'm just guessing that they were lesbians because we all had the same haircut. And when I say we, I mean me and the girls.
Who doesn't like the two dykes fighting?
Well, they were big girls.
I was in Vegas one year. This is before the convention. It was at Coyote Ugly's. There's this black girl who looks exactly like Jada Pinkett. I mean, this chick was smoking, and she had two fucking dykes. Gangster ass dyke chicks like fighting over her, and they were just mouthing off to each other, and then these chicks threw down, and goddamn, they threw down. I didn't want no piece of these two women because these chicks would have beat the crap out of me because they threw down like they were like professional boxers. I mean, it was like, hot just standing there like in shock with these chicks just strapping it all like men just like a foot away from me. It was crazy.
I see black women fighting, I go the other way.
Right.
Oh, I got another funny story I could tell about a black woman. I went to a Spurs game one time. Sorry to get off the topic, but this is a funny story.
Sure.
I went to a Spurs game, and I got a flat tire right after I left the game, so I pulled into this gas station of Alero, and I just kind of parked to the side, and I didn't have a fucking spare, so I had to call like a tow truck. So I'm sitting there waiting for my car, and this little short, fat, black guy kind of rolls up on a bicycle, and he kind of passes this.
He didn't ride, did he?
He's on his little bicycle, and he's got a little guy with a beer belly, and he stops and he starts talking to this one good-looking black chick in like a Corvette or something, and then a few minutes later, this big-ass, old, funky, like 70s-style van pulls up, and this giant black woman, big, fat black woman, gets out. And she starts telling the guy, you need to go get on home, and so, and just kind of giving him a hard time. And he's kind of like, I guess, trying to match with this other girl. So he kind of starts giving her lip. So they start going back and forth. And the lady kind of turns. And when she turns, like, she looks the other way for some reason. The dude just fucking rears back. And he just punches this fucking lady right in the face. I mean, as hard as he could. I'm just, like, sitting in my car like, oh, my God. And he hits this chick, and this chick just no sells it. Just totally no sells it. Looks at him, oh, you fucked up now. And she just fucking threw like four or five punches, floored the dude, beat the shit out of him, and told him, you get on your fucking bike and you get your bitch ass home now. And the dude got on his bike and he went home. It was, God, dude, it was incredible.
There's some domestic violence there. I don't know why I found that entertaining, but I did. Wow, this match. I bet you this one was in slow motion. The WWF Tag Team Champions, Demolition, Axe, and Smash, they beat the Powers of Pain. By the way, I saw his niece? Yes, she wrestled last night on Impact, and she's a huge woman.
He is, or either the other girl is just very small. I don't know.
Well, she is very small. She's tiny, but that girl is pretty huge. Evelise is tiny.
Rod. Yeah. And I think she got implants, but that's beside the point.
She's good, too. They need to bring her up to the main roster. Don't send her OVW or anything. I thought she was pretty good.
They need to sign both of them. But I kind of take offense to what you said about the match being slow because the Warlord was one of the slowest wrestlers ever. But come on, the Barbarian, one of the best big men ever. I mean, very underrated. I mean, I love the Barbarian.
Well, first off, Ed, you did not let me finish. The WWF Tag Team Champions Demolition, Axe, and Smash beat the Powers of Pain and...
Oh, okay. Well, that slows it down. Yeah.
Right. 8 minutes and 20 seconds this went. And I bet you time stood still.
I remember when Fuji could still go. I remember he used to always wrestle Sweet Stan Hansen on Primetime Wrestling. And
Sweet Stan Hansen.
Still move
or
a little
Sweet
bit. Sweet Hansen, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not sweet.
Stan Hansen was not sweet.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
No, he was, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen him and he could go. I remember they did the, they were doing this, they would do like these, like this year and the year before, they'd do like these 5K runs, like WrestleMania runs or something, 5K runs, and Fuji was in it because he was training for the match and he was in his tux and stuff and he won the 5K run. They said he got in one of them carts on the boardwalk and got a ride, so that's how he won the race. And then there, it was the year before when Bobby Heenan was training for the match, the six-man, and he was pushing the gorilla around on the boardwalk in one of those carts, you know, for exercise.
I don't know how Fuji kept winning worst manager. He was awesome.
I'm glad someone thinks so.
The seventh match on this show.
Another
Tino Bravo pinned. Tino Bravo pinned Ronnie Garvin in 3 minutes and 6 seconds.
Tino Bravo had the worst finisher in the world. He had that side slam. Didn't look like
The worst part about that is he set it up with a fucking pile driver.
Yeah, I know, that's right.
Speaking of pile drivers, I think this is a good time to talk about the match for Monday, the CM Punk and John Cena match that the wrestling world is abuzz for.
I give it 4 stars.
I thought it was excellent. One of the best matches I've seen in a very long time. In fact, I plan to go watch it again tonight because my son hasn't seen it yet.
Did you see the one thrown on the board where it's like, I don't know where it's from, but it's all these guys just bitching and dick hurt, ass hurt because Dave Meltzer didn't give it 5 stars.
God. Everybody needs their opinion validated by Dave Meltzer or something. I don't know.
No life.
See, now had Dave said 5 stars, they would have been.
You would have bitched that it wasn't that good.
No. They would have been like all happy, like, yeah, Dave Meltzer, he's, you know, because they're all like, because, yeah, they, you know, because Dave Meltzer agrees with them. They would have been all, you know, happy and made a big deal about it. But Dave Meltzer disagrees by 2/3 of a star, you know, they're going to fucking.
No, here's what happened. Dave would give it 5 stars, and then you'd have people on the bar going, well, it was good, but it wasn't 5 stars good.
That's why I don't use star ratings. People get so technical with it, and they get pissed off. And God, it's like an endless thing.
All right, don't get me started. Anyway, eighth match on
the
show.
And the first segment with Brock and Hunter, I thought was pretty awesome, too.
Oh, good Lord. That was. And
I
you know what?
I wasn't so much looking forward to that match, but now I am. So.
You know what? It was just like the very first Fatal 4-Way they had, the pay-per-view, the Fatal 4-Way. If Vader hadn't got busted open in that 4-way match, the match would have been taken down like a whole star. But because Vader got busted open hard way, it was an amazing, amazing match. Same way with Brock and Hunter. When Brock doesn't get busted open and isn't bleeding all over the place, it ain't as cool.
Same with Steve Austin and Bret Hart, you could say also. In that
they
had at WrestleMania.
Yeah. But we're talking inadvertent blood. I'm pretty sure there was a blade job there.
And he was just bleeding. The back of his head is bleeding, and he's still going. It's scary as shit. When you see a guy like that is bleeding and still coming at you. Jesus.
Yeah. Okay, match number 8. Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, they beat Tito Santana and Rick Martel. 9 minutes, 17 seconds.
True.
Okay. Well, then we had a Piper's Pit with Morton Downey Jr. and a glove.
Sorry, the thing didn't want to click. I was going to do it while you were talking about that other match. Well, real quick, that other match is when Rick Martel turned on Tito Santana against the Brainbusters. because he was Tito Santana was doing the flying forearm, and I think it was Tully Blanchard moved and nailed Rick Martel, and he got knocked into the outside. And
that's what like ended the team, right?
Yeah, and then Rick Martel walked off, and Arn and Tully gave him a spike pile driver and won the match. Did actually a pretty damn good match before that. So,
and by the way, the best thing you come up with for Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, the Brain Busters.
Probably the Brain Angels. They're his busters.
Good work.
And Arn Anderson used to use the Gourd Buster.
Yeah. Yeah. Next up, before I was so rudely interrupted with theme music, we had a Piper's Pit segment with Morton Downey Jr. and Brother Love. Morton Downey Jr. was a talk show host and a loudmouth on late night TV. Kind of the very first Jerry Springer kind of types.
Yes, yeah, but didn't he like fake some like racist attack on him or something? He painted a swastika on his face, but it was backwards because he was looking in the mirror when he did it.
Hold on.
Oh, I don't know.
What's it called? A swastika?
Swastika.
Yeah.
Remember, he was painted like one of those barber poles in Revenge of the Nerds, The Next Generation.
Basically, he staged a beating on himself, and what was the name of the movie? Was it Fight Club? Where he beats himself up?
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have seen Fight Club, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about it where it's the movie. We're not.
I don't want
okay.
to.
Anyway. So Piper ended up blowing a fire extinguisher all over Morton Downey Jr. because he wouldn't.
People hated this. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I didn't find it.
Morton Downey Jr. got comeuppance.
He was annoying. But it was kind of like an annoying way because he's chain smoking the whole time. He's blowing smoke in the Piper's face. He's just like a perfect asshole. I mean, that's all he is just an asshole. And you just wanted him to get fucked over and Piper scraped the shit out of him.
Yeah, and that's what you got. Good payoff.
Brother Love, those preachers, they can do a Piper imitation pretty good. I don't know if you ever heard of them, like the Bruce and Tom Preacher. And do a good Piper imitation.
I'll be there. Okay. 10th match on the show. Jake Roberts beat Andre the Giant 9 minutes, 44 seconds via DQ. John Studd, God rest his soul, was the special referee.
Now, this is another one of those like matches where you look at the time and you're kind of like, what the hell? Why was Andre wrestling for 10 minutes?
Because he was in there with one of the great masterminds of the pro wrestling world, Jake Snake Roberts.
If you say so, is this when he gave Andre the heart attack?
Do what?
Is this when he gave Andre the heart attack?
Yeah, that was like the year before, like in October or something.
Oh, okay.
And on Saturday night's main event when he threw the snake at him.
That's right.
Yeah. Horrible.
I remember this was a match where they started the Jake Roberts, Ted DiBiase feud, and they came and stole the snake. And Jake went and ran down the aisle, got the snake back, and Andre had attacked Stud. So Andre the Giant, the big John Stud in the feud, and set the roles are reversed now, and Andre's the heel and John Stud's baby face. Nothing I need to see.
Take the next match, Katrina. I'll be right back.
Okay. The next match was the Hart Foundation defeated Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine when Bret Hart pinned the Honky Tonk Man.
Is this the one with DDP?
No, that's the next year when he drove the car out to the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the next year when he did
that.
And this was before the Rhythm and Blues thing. And Greg Valentine still had blonde hair. So.
Oh, he's okay.
Yeah.
The Hart Foundation are awesome, and I don't know why, but I at the time back in the day, I hated the Honky Tonk Man. But for some reason, I love rhythm and blues. I mean, I know this is right before, but I don't know what it was. I guess seeing Greg the Hammer with black hair and trying to act like he can, like, play the guitar and do, like, a jig or whatever. And that was some entertaining shit right there.
Yeah. The next match saw Rick Rude pin the Ultimate Warrior in 9 minutes, 36 seconds to win the Intercontinental title. This was a pretty decent match, I remember.
Yeah, for some reason, Rude could actually, like, get a decent match out of the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah. Rude was a bumping machine back then. He'd take some crazy bumps.
Yeah. And that's when he had the fucking awesome trunks where he'd have, like, basically his opponent's face on them and stuff.
You know, like when he had Cheryl Roberts' face on there and Jake Roberts came and pulled his pants off or something. He was just like that beat. I was trying to remember, I think, I was going to say this was the first loss for the Ultimate Warrior WWF. He lost like to Andre the Giant, I think the year before, and I think in Italy or something. Andre had beat him. But this was, he didn't do many jobs back then.
They actually took the Warrior Andre thing around the loop, and I actually got to see that match.
Then he just basically give on.
One at a time. Was that?
Was he winning in like 30 seconds?
I think it went. It probably went like 2 or 3 minutes, but yeah, it was pretty darn quick.
Then he basically just gave him like 4 clotheslines and pin him.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. Talk about a match. I don't know. That sounds like the worst combination, Andre the Giant and the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah. I think Andre might have got a headbutt in as it was years ago, so forgive me. 13th match on the show, Jim Duggan, double countout with Bad News Brown. 3 minutes
and 49 seconds. The thing I remember about this match was Duggan had the biggest glob of snot in his beard. It was gross. He was so big, Jesse had body Ventura point out, said, look, gorilla, that's snot on his beard. It was gross.
It's funny when it's that obvious and you can't help but not see it.
One thing that I like about these early WrestleManias is it's like the only time of the year, like only one of the few times of the year you get Gorilla and Jesse Ventura working together.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were a good team.
Well, didn't they, like, do primetime?
Yeah, they did that, like, in a little bit in 86, and I think in 85. And then Jesse started doing movies, and so they replaced him with Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Bruce and Bobby Heenan in 32 seconds.
In the semi-main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah, this would be the equivalent to the girls' match at pay-per-views.
The Red Rooster won a match at WrestleMania, and you know, I totally had forgot about that until I read this right now.
Because it was at the end of the Intercontinental title match when Bobby had interfered, and then Ultimate Warrior gave him the big press slam, drop at the end of the match. So Bobby Heenan was – Red Rooster could only be Bobby Heenan because he was injured by the Ultimate Warrior before the match.
Yeah, because Terry Taylor needed to, you know, have somebody. Anyway, Bobby Heenan, by the way, bumping machine.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. And in the main event, we had Hulk Hogan pinning the Macho Man Randy Savage 17 minutes and 54 seconds to win the WWF World title.
In a storyline that lasted, what, over a year?
Yeah. About a year. Yeah, I mean, it really started like at the previous WrestleMania. So, when Savage won the title, so yeah.
And as we said, the guests were Rockin' Robin. She was the vocalist and also one Run D MC.
They did the WrestleMania rap. I remember that.
So that was WrestleMania 5.
That's the hideous.
Moving on to WrestleMania 6. It's called the Ultimate Challenge. It's April 1st, 1990, the year I graduated high school. God help us all.
That's the year I graduated high school.
Wait, what? You graduated in high school in 1990?
Yeah.
You're not... I graduated in 90. The hell, I'm older than you.
Yes. You were probably held back.
No, I was never held back. I was a football player.
Well, that explains it.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense, actually. Especially if you were playing football in Texas. Anyway, this was in Toronto, Canada. It was at Sky Dome.
Wonder why they're all 70. Athletes are littered. Just give them a free ride through high school.
It was at Sky Dome, and it drew 76,287. Shown live on closed-circuit TV.
I was going to say, what? You know, a free ride there, I'm not going to take it? The hell?
Well, yeah, would you like to learn something and get through on your own power, on your own merits?
Mm. Here we go.
I was too busy smoking weed, doing acid, and
right,
and striking out.
You're not
girls.
Making any case for yourself here, Edward.
Uh-huh. We used to get free tacos in the lunch lady too for breakfast.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Tacos for breakfast?
Tacos, dude. Dude, you live in Texas. You should know about breakfast tacos.
No, but breakfast burritos.
Well, the breakfast burrito, but smaller, dude.
To get them
lady.
From Sonic.
Lady,
like they were feeding Lawler this past Monday, and they were feeding him some Sonic chicken.
Girl,
you need to get out of Dallas. You need to get out of Dallas. There's too many white people there. You need to come to San Antonio.
Too many white people.
Brazil.
I wish I could see some.
All right, you two go to your corners. Let's finish this up. We've got 12 minutes of showtime left. Come on now, let's finish strong.
Next time we get more than that, Craig.
Okay, I've got 12 minutes of showtime.
Keep it going, Jesus.
This was shown on closed circuit TV and it drew 53,000. So. In the first match, Paul Roma pinned the Brooklyn Brawler.
This is a dark match, by the way.
Hmm.
No. It was refereed by young Shane McMahon.
Oh wow.
But when Paul Roma was a jobber, I always thought he had a good look, and at least they gave him that one little push with him and Jimmy Powers.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Hercules, they were a good team.
Yeah, they were a good team. And then he became a horseman, and then everyone hated shit on him because of it.
It's like he's supposed to turn it down.
Yeah.
We then had Rick Martel. He pinned Coco Beware 3 minutes and 51 seconds.
He made him
submit
to Dalton Crab.
Thank you.
I hated Rick Martel at this time. I mean, and looking back, the model gimmick was awesome, looking back. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I hated it because, you know, Rick Martel, for years, like when he was the AWA champion and a little bit after, he was like one of the best work rates in all North America and just had awesome matches. And then all of a sudden, he's just doing ha-ha bullshit, stalling shit, and didn't ever really wrestle anymore.
Right. I loved wrestling for two reasons. When Brutus Beefcake would come to the ring, he was the barber. But see, the person at the back of the arena could not see it if he held up scissors. So what did they do? They got him a pair of cutting shears, like he would trim a hedge with. Rick Martel, when he came to the ring, you couldn't see him spray cologne in the air. So they got one of these gimmicks that you would take and spray your flowers for aphids and colored it blue and wrote perfume on it. And he would go pumping this thing on the way to the ring.
One of those atomizers. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember when you signed it, Jake the Snake?
And
yeah.
Those things were out to date when he used it.
Yeah. It's true. But it worked.
Yeah.
It was arrogance. That was the clone.
Yeah, arrogance.
That's right.
He did have the perfect voice for the gimmick.
Yeah. Very true. Next matchup, we had Demolition Axe and Smash beating Andre the Giant and Haku, 9 minutes and 30 seconds. They won the tag titles when Axe pinned Haku.
Haku and Andre are actually a good team.
This was, I'm pretty sure this was Andre's very last match in WWF. He died shortly thereafter, which means 3 years.
Yeah.
I remember this was his base turn. Bobby Heenan was browbeating him after the match, and we got Andre the Giant and Haku. I don't know who I would blame, but I don't know. Andre the Giant, maybe because I can outrun him. I don't think he messed with Haku. It was funny because Bobby Heenan, he's yelling at him, and you can, if you listen close enough, you hear what he's saying. He's saying, I'm the fucking boss. You do what I say. And so then Andre gave him, paintbrushed him, and then threw Bobby Heenan and Haku off of the cart that brought him to the ring, and he wrote back on his own.
He did come out a few times after this, but he was basically in the sash because he had to have the walkers.
Yeah.
Or the crutches. And I think he did wrestle one more match in Japan where he teamed with a Giant Baba, which...
Yeah, they beat Demolition. They had like a big Japanese show with the WWF and New Japan and All Japan all in the same show.
And you talk about a slow match. I mean, I can only imagine how slow that match, because that's when that was... Like I say, Andre was already on crutches by this time. And, I can only imagine how much pain he had been in after the match.
Yeah.
And, Baba wasn't a workhorse, he told. I actually kind of wish I could see that match. I'd be very curious to see it.
Next up, we had Earthquake. What's that?
I was just telling you to continue.
Oh, I'm sorry. Earthquake and Hercules, Travesty of Justice. 4 minutes and 52 seconds.
Yeah, this was when Earthquake, this was like when he first came in, and he was getting the big heel push as a big monster.
I never liked Earthquake for some reason.
Yeah,
he was okay.
I mean, God rest his soul, but I mean, I don't know what it was. I could never buy him
as a real athlete, number one.
And then, he fucking killed fucking Damien.
Yeah, he killed him.
Wrong.
Okay. Next up.
Did you say you wanted to see that match with Demolition and Bob and Andre?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll send you a link to it. I just looked it up on YouTube.
Okay, cool.
Next up, Brutus Beefcake pinning
the wrestling fan's greatest fucking tool.
I know. In seconds, you can have what you're looking for. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, Contreras, you have DirecTV. Have you checked out the feature on your DirecTV where you got it hooked up to the internet and you can actually use your television on YouTube?
Yeah. Well, I haven't done it on my DirecTV because I already got the YouTube thing on my Xbox, so.
Oh, there you go. That's pretty cool. Anyway, moving right along. Match number five. Well, it says number six on here. I don't know what it is, but anyway. Brutus Beefcake pinned Mr. Perfect 7 minutes, 48 seconds.
That's a horrible result.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
A lot of travesty and justices in the last two WrestleManias.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's more to come. Bad News Brown and Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Why didn't he beat Mr. Perfect? Because wasn't Perfect like above him at this time?
It was Hogan's buddy.
Yeah, it was Hogan's boy.
Oh, that is true. That is an easy. That's a guaranteed win.
I remember they did the only finishes I guess Kurt Angle could lose in when he gets catapulted into the
turnbuckles and he hits his head on the ring post.
Right.
Wait, he did
you
that
know,
in this match too?
He did that in this match. I remember he did it when he lost the AWA title to Jerry Lawler. He did it when
he lost
the IC title to Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did
well,
it
he was very
a lot.
He was very good at it.
He did it.
I don't think
a
anyone.
Lot.
I don't think anyone could fly into that metal post better than Kurt Hennig. I mean, he was just awesome at it. Maybe Shawn Michaels is the only one that could come close.
We had Bad News Brown. He went to a double countout with Rowdy Roddy Piper, 6 minutes and 48 seconds.
Is this when Piper was fucking all half black-faced?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was horrible. And Jesse Ventura during the commentary said he's going to have to be biased on this one because that was his tag team partner, Roddy Piper, because they just got finished doing a pilot for a series where they were like, I guess they were wrestlers that had gotten kicked off at a wrestling because they were too brutal and so bad. Oh, they were police officers or something. And it lasted one episode and never heard from again.
Oh my!
Why did Piper do that anyway? I mean, was like Bad News pulling the race card before the match or something?
I don't know. I thought he was just doing it like he had a split personality, like he's Hot Rod, and then on the black part he's a Hot Scott or something. I never understood it. Roddy Piper was goofy as hell.
My favorite thing about Bad News, as good as a wrestler as he was, the best thing he ever did was that one Wrestling Observer Live on IATA where. God damn, did he have a lot of shit to bitch about like racist shit. You know, wanting to kick Andre's ass for being a racist, telling Vince that, you know, Sapphire is racist and he needs to change the name, so he changed it to Sweet Sapphire, and he's like bitching about that and just, you know, bitching about Piper. I mean,
are you sitting here like... Do a program with Jake the Snake because, you know, the stereotype is that blacks are afraid of snakes.
Yeah. He's the type of person that you couldn't say, like, you couldn't ever describe somebody, like, oh, that black man over there, because Bad News would be like, why he gotta be black?
Oh, because it's easier to point him out. Check ass. Okay, before this next match, there was a thing in the Steve Allen and the Bolsheviks were in shower with the piano. I remember correctly. And they were going to do the Russian national anthem in the shower with a piano. So they're getting ready to do it, and the toilet flushes, and the Bolsheviks go crazy, and we go back to ringside. I don't know the things of this
no.
shit. It's like you think I'm fucking with you by what I just described. It did happen.
And the match only lasted 19 seconds.
Yeah. The Hart Foundation beat Nikolai Volkov and Boris Zukov when Bret Hart pinned Zukov.
Zukov had the biggest head I've ever seen on a human being,
true.
I think.
Very true.
I think Tito Ortiz's head's bigger, but yeah, he did have a big head. And supposedly,
I don't know who that is.
Supposedly, Boris Zukov owns a copy of The Last Battle of Atlanta. He should release it if he does have it, I mean.
Okay.
He probably don't even know he has.
Right.
Another travesty of justice, the Barbarian pinned Tito Santana, 4 minutes and 33 seconds.
I'm fine with this because the ending was fucking awesome. Barbarian hit a clothesline. Fucking killed him.
He
yeah.
killed a lot of people.
Barbarian was awesome.
He wasn't the worker that Tito Santana was, let's be honest.
Yeah, but that was Tito's job, was to lose everybody.
That I can't argue with. Here we go. The son of a plumber, Dusty Rhodes, and his sweet Sapphire, they beat Randy Savage and Sherry Martel in 7 minutes and 52 seconds when Sapphire pinned Sherry Martel.
So this was Elizabeth's return at the beginning of this match.
Hmm.
She was in the...
Anything with Dusty Rhodes and Polka Dots and Sapphire in the WWE is fucking awesome.
I always laugh when people say how awful that was. It's some bitch got the polka dots over. I didn't even find a problem with the gimmick. I love those vignettes where he would be the butcher man or the toilet man or the plumber or whoever.
Right.
He said he's in the butcher shop. He said, you can't beat my prices, but you can't beat my meat.
That's right. Hey,
Theme song was awesome. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
He's just a common man. Anyway.
What a way to fall for Randy Savage, the main event 1 year, and then he's in a mixed tag the next year.
But Sapphire, wasn't she basically just, she was kind of, I think she was just kind of like a Mark fan, and like, I think he was either St. Louis or Kansas City.
Yeah.
And she would basically pick up all the wrestlers at the airport and drive them wherever they needed to go. And she was just a big fan, and she liked doing that. And then I guess the promoter from there suggested that her to for the part or whatever. And then, like, you know, it's kind of cool that she got repaid for her all her generosity that she showed them, you know, before.
Mm.
And the Million Dollar Man bought her a bunch of stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then years later, her daughter managed Shelton Benjamin. Just kidding.
Who?
Shelton Benjamin.
Shelton Benjamin's mama.
Yeah. That woman was
amazing. Funny thing. That's horrible.
Oh, my gosh. Don't you remember the one scene when Shelton Benjamin, and she had just lectured Shelton Benjamin and she was in a wheelchair, and she's like, you get your monkey ass, and Shelton Benjamin busted up on camera.
She came on to Mr. McMahon, I think. That was funny stuff. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah. She was
awesome. Mentioned his mama was funny.
All right. Match number 11. We had the Orient Express beating the Rockers. 7 minutes, 38 seconds. I remember this being a heck of a match.
Yeah, this was a very good match.
I can imagine how much better it would have been had it been Diamond instead of Santo.
True.
Yep.
Very true. Jim Duggan, Pendino Bravo, 4 minutes, 15 seconds.
Well, this ain't much of a show. This is like a one-match show, it seems like.
Yeah.
Some of these matches just,
yeah,
I don't know,
like,
not much to them.
Put a bunch of names into a tumbler and pulled out.
Yeah.
I'm sure this one was, there was nothing wrong with this, but Ted DiBiase beat Jake Roberts 11 minutes, 50 seconds via countout.
Yeah, it was for the $1 million belt because Jake Roberts had stolen it, and he put it in the bag with Damian, and DiBiase didn't want to go in the bag and get it, so he paid the boss man, told the boss man to get it for him, and then boss man said, well, I'm a cop, you can't be bribing me, and that's when the boss man turned babyface. And Mary Tyler Moore was given a $100 bill at ringside by Jake Roberts.
And speaking of the big boss man, he was in the next match, and he pinned Akeem in 1 minute, 49 seconds.
That's right. Beginning of this match, DiBiase had crawled under the ring after the match with Jake Roberts, so the boss man came out, he jumped in from behind and watched him over a little bit and then threw him in, and the boss man still won.
Yeah, poor Akeem.
We then had Rick Rude pinning Jimmy Superfly Snuka in 3 minutes and 59 seconds. I don't know where they came up with this match.
I know Rick Rude was fighting the Warrior the year before. Now he's fighting Jimmy Snuka.
Taken from the top, by the way.
And just 5 years, like 5 years before, Jimmy Snuka was like one of the hottest acts and most popular guys, and, you know, the mighty have fallen.
Yep.
Just kill one person, and look what happened. Anyway, and in the main event, we had the Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior. He pinned Hulk Hogan to win the WWF title in 22 minutes and 51 seconds, and this match was great.
Yeah.
This match was 5 stars. I don't care what anyone says. Just because it was Hogan and the Warrior, they had this match worked out perfect. It was a perfect match.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually,
there's nothing wrong with it.
I think they worked it out. I think maybe Pat Patterson came up with it, put the match together.
Makes sense.
I think they had to go somewhere and work together, you know, to work out the match. And so, mm-hmm. But yeah, this was a hell of a match. I love this match.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, because they basically went back and forth. Everything. The crowd was insane. The crowd was split 50-50. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, when he kicked out of the leg drop, I mean, that was like, wow. And then when he hit the splash of pin, and it was like, oh, my God.
He didn't kick out of the leg drop. He just moved.
Yeah.
Just the storytelling of the match,
that's,
you know, as they first started out, you know, they would exchange, you know, shoulder blocks and nobody would move. And then they'd throw clotheslines and nobody would sell. And it just built up to a very, very good match.
And they did like, so much with just their faces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Warrior like going crazy and Hogan being like in shock when he couldn't move the Ultimate Warrior. And just, it was just fantastic.
And they did the bit where I think Hogan got clotheslined on the outside and he's holding his knee. And
mm-hmm.
He said it looked like he ruptured his patella or something. Which just happened to Sting, and Sting was kept out of the ring for 6 months, but Hogan just walked it off and got back in the ring.
Rub a little dirt on it. Good to go. That's right. Now, guest at this year's WrestleMania was Steve Allen. He was the interview. Rhonda Barrett, and I remember her. She was on USA up all night.
Rhonda Barrett.
And
not Rhonda.
I'm sorry. Rhonda Barrett.
No, her name was Rhonda. Her name, it says Rhonda Barrett, but her name was Rhonda.
Her name is Rhonda Barrett.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that's Rhonda. The real name, though.
Y'all got Rhonda on the brain.
Rhonda Sears. No, I'm thinking of wrong WrestleMania. What am I talking about?
Thinking of when the WrestleMania 10.
My bad.
When Reynolds banker.
I just wanted to think about her because I remember she was hot, dude.
Yes. Blonde, very large breasts, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And the vocalist for the evening, one Robert Goulet.
That's right, because they're in Canada, so they did the Canadian national anthem. Oh, Canada.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Sure. Okay. Well.
Oh, and also, you know, they had the Rhythm and Blues do their new song, Hunka 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 Hunky Love. And the Bushwhackers were dressed as Benders, and they destroyed the guitars.
And this is the one
where
DDT and the Pink Cadillac.
That was where the car came down, the Pink Cadillac driven by Diamond Dallas Page.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, Greg Valentine with his dark hair and Gorilla Monsoon calling Boxcar Willie.
I just remember when he would do that, whatever, I don't even know how to describe it, but he would do that. He'd do something like all the old rock stars would try and do, was it like arms flailing and... Oh, God, that was a sight to see.
Okay, moving right along. WrestleMania 7, let's just kind of roll through this a little bit quick. We're running out of showtime. Stars and Stripes Forever, March 24th, 1991, held in Los Angeles, California, at the Sports Arena, drew 15,000, and it made 360,000 just on closed circuit TV.
It was really in the
Staples Center.
The big the place holds 100,000.
The
Rose Coliseum.
The Rose Bowl.
LA Coliseum.
Yeah, the LA Coliseum.
Yeah, and it was really the ticket sales were low, but they said it was because of the terrorist threats.
Slaughter.
Desert Storm and stuff was going on, so.
Sure. In the dark match, we had Coco Beware, and he pinned the Brooklyn Brawler. Second time in a row, the Brooklyn Brawler has not made a pay-per-view.
In WrestleMania.
We had the Rockers beating the Barbarian and Haku, 10 minutes, 41 seconds. Michaels pinned Haku.
Very good match.
Ed, I will I will give you just a minute. I will say the match. I will describe the match.
Big,
I'll let you have the floor. The Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, he pinned Dino Bravo, 3 minutes and 11 seconds.
In the greatest match in the history of WrestleMania.
Davey Smith, Davey Boy Smith, pinned the Warlord, 8 minutes, 15 seconds. Two jacked up dudes.
As good as Davey was, I can't imagine this one being any good.
I was always impressed when Davey went to face the Warlord and get him up in that big vertical suplex and hold him there.
Yeah. This is when Smith had the dreads kind of like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I remember. The Nasty Boys defeated the Hart Foundation, Travesty of Justice, to win the WWF Tag Team titles. Knobs pinned Neidhart, 12 minutes, 10 seconds.
Very good match.
Well, I'm sure, yeah, it was good to the Hart Foundation. And the Nasty Boys could still move. They could still move a little bit at this time.
Yeah.
They got a lot worse after.
Oh, come on. The matches they had with Harlem Heat and WCW, some of my favorites.
Actually, the ones they had with, like, Texas Jack and Max Payne.
True.
They had
those
were good. There. I remember the best match I ever saw, man, was that match with the Steiner, the Halloween Havoc one year. Steiner just beat the shit out of those guys.
I remember the Nasty Boys and Harlem Heat. They had, I can't remember what arena it's in, but it's the one where they always
had like, Ketchup, the Mustard Line.
Yeah.
It was Tupelo. It was at the TV Uncensored pay-per-view.
Yeah, and I think it was Stevie Ray was falling, and he went to grab hold of Sherry, but all he got was her shirt, and pulled it halfway down, and almost saw some naughty bits on TV.
Sure.
The next match, we had a reincarnation of just this past Monday with Daniel Bryan. Jake Roberts pinned Rick Martel in the blindfold match, 8 minutes and 34 seconds.
I like this match. I don't care what anybody... A lot of people hate it, but I enjoyed it. It was funny.
As I said, Jake Roberts, such a ring technician, and his psychology, just by the way he moved, just by his facial expressions, his psychology is just unreal, and you could actually even tell it when he had this blindfold on.
Yeah. And the story was pretty cool, the way he like outsmarted Martel, because he just started pointing and let the fans...
Yeah.
Like, be his eyes.
I remember one of the big spots was Martel ended up on the outside, and he had a chair, and he swung it and hit the ring posts, and he jarred his hands.
Yeah, he shook his hands out. It hurt. Yeah. Good stuff. This is the debut of The Undertaker, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, not the debut, but his first Mania.
His first Mania debut of The Undertaker.
Yeah. The Undertaker... This would have been when he was 1-0.
Hey, did you see what the time limit is? That makes me want to do something here.
Yeah, I was hoping you wouldn't see that. The Undertaker pinned Superfly Jimmy Snuka in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Take it away, Ed.
No reason, pot reference. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Well, I just exhaled a large amount of marijuana out of my system.
Yeah.
You know, the streak begins. The streak begins, and what number are they up to now?
Well, he's 21-0 now, isn't he? He's going for 22 this year.
Yeah.
I think so.
And I just remember, it's so funny because for more than half of these matches, they were probably the worst matches on a lot of the shows. And then all of a sudden, when he got old, he just started having... The best match on the show, like him and Batista, the two with Sean, the two with Hunter. I mean, it's amazing.
Yep.
Of course, you know, Sean and Hunter and Batista, well, not Batista, but Sean and Hunter are a lot different than, you know, Giant Gonzalez and Kamala.
Yes, there's a little difference between those guys.
Yeah, true. Just a little.
One doesn't dress like a tree.
Okay. Match number 9, we had the Ultimate Warrior. He pinned Randy Savage. 20 minutes and 48 seconds, and it was a quote-unquote retirement match.
Awesome match.
And it was a freaking awesome match.
I go back and forth. I don't know which is either this one or the match the year before with Hogan. King Savage, I think, is better. Maybe the Hogan match.
Well, they're both great. And then Sherry was awesome in this match. And she was also smoking, looking pretty good. And
I remember Shannon at Bobby Heenan's at ringside, and I guess he has some mighty fine vision or something, because he could see Elizabeth, and she was all the way across the auditorium there. Said, "Hey, isn't that Elizabeth?" And he's like pointing, and I'm watching on TV, and I can't even see her. In the aftermath, when Sherry turned on him and Elizabeth came back in, and people were crying, so like that was all good.
Craig, yeah. You were crying, weren't you, Craig?
I might have shed a tear or two.
Yeah, I knew it.
I'm a very sensitive man.
But I love the way he won, because then he like drove like fucking. Well, he took like a bunch of elbows, and then he just delivered clothesline after clothesline after clothesline and clotheslines that were like throwing Randy out of the ring, basically. And
yeah, Warrior got his Randy Savage hit him with like 4 elbows that he kicked out of, which I call it kind of thought was kind of stupid. Just kind of maybe a bit too much. You hit him with that many, but he kicked out, and then he just started giving him like those shoulder blocks, and he would just like get speared out of the ring. After about the 4th one, he just grabbed him and rolled him in, and then he just put his foot on him and got the 3 down. I thought that was an awesome finish.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, this next one's for you, Mr. Semper Vivi. He loves it when I don't pronounce Japanese names. So I'll just say this. Tenryu and Koji Kamado.
Itao.
Thank you. They beat Demolition.
They can't pronounce it, and you can't, Greg.
They beat Demolition, Smash, and Crush. Tenryu
right.
Pinned Smash. 4 minutes, 44 seconds.
And I believe it was the Japanese tour, maybe like a week later. Kato had a shoot incident with him and Earthquake. And
ooh.
He didn't want to cooperate with him. And he got on the microphone and told everybody in the audience how fake wrestling was, and he got fired.
Oops.
Wow.
You know, after all these years, they always have rumors of WWF doing business with New Japan. They've been, doing business with All Japan. And what did we get out of it after all these years? Hardly anything.
You got Yoshi Tuatsu.
There was that one Royal Rumble where Kabuki came and helped kill the Undertaker.
There, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
We got Hakushi. I don't think he was with New Japan though.
Sure.
He was with I don't know who.
Oh yeah, and the Steiner Brothers and all those great men. Oh wait, that was WCW. Why can't they do a deal? I don't understand.
Great Moto came in last year.
The Big Boss Man beat Mr. Perfect. Yeah. Big Boss Man beat Mr. Perfect 10 minutes and 47 seconds via DQ.
These guys work very good together because they could take some silly bumps.
Yeah.
This is a Boss Man that got into shape too, right?
Yeah, he dropped a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And this is where Andre returned from the year before. Heenan had interfered, and then all of a sudden Andre comes out and Heenan turns around and he looked at him and his eyes was like bugging out of his head. good stuff.
Had Earthquake pinning Greg Valentine
3:14.
From Hulk Hogan, sure. From feud with Hulk Hogan to beating Greg Valentine.
That's right.
Did Greg still have his black hair?
No, he was a baby face at this point. He had turned on Jimmy Hart because Jimmy Hart accidentally hit him with a guitar when he faced Saba Simba in Madison Square Garden.
The Legion of Doom. They beat Hercules and Paul Roma in 59 seconds when Animal pinned Roma.
That was disappointing because that's when Hercules and Roma were actually doing a lot of, you know, were looking good and having some good matches, and then they just get squashed. And I don't think they were around too much longer after that.
No.
Okay, and we had Virgil beat Ted DiBiase 7:41. That's way too much time to give Virgil.
I think it was like training him for this match or something like that.
Was this their first match or the second one?
This is the first match they had. Second one's when he won the second one that he was at SummerSlam 91 when he won the $1 million belt, which actually was, if you go back and watch it, it was a pretty damn good match.
Yeah, I was about to say that, though. That was a good one, but I don't really remember this one too much. But I remember the other one a lot.
This was when, because you remember Sherry came out as his new, after the match, as his new manager. She had just got to a Savage earlier.
Yeah. I remember she used to look hot in her matching outfit that she used to wear.
Yep.
Remember when she got spanked on prime time.
The Mountie pinned Tito Santana 1:21.
That's how you can tell they're running long.
Yeah. That's true. And in the main event, Hulk Hogan pinned Sergeant Slaughter 20:26 to win the WWF title. This was a really good match.
He had a good storyline and stuff to it. I mean, I was still kind of appalled that Sergeant Slaughter was even WWF champion in 1991.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know, especially beating the Ultimate Warrior.
And they built this whole thing around, you know, like the stuff in Iraq and stuff like that. A lot of people were negative on it. I wasn't that bothered by it, but some were.
He basically had Slaughter doing the Colonel De Beers, where he was a sympathizer to Iraq and hanging out with the
He wore the he had the old boots, but they were like the Iron Sheik boots. Toes were curled up. So that was pretty cool.
And speaking of the Iron Sheik, Colonel Mustafa was at ringside.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't there yet.
Oh, he wasn't there yet?
Iron Sheik had none.
I thought he had both of them.
No, this was later on.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm going to read off a list of guests, and there's a lot of them that says debater. Was there some kind of debate on the show?
They were having a debate on the instant replay rule in football, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And debating on whether they should do it in wrestling, and it ended up with some kind of a skit with the Bushwhackers.
I see. It must be
Bob Costas, but he was like all offended by the Desert Storm stuff they were doing that he pulled out of the thing.
I see. So Bob Costas, Paul McGuire, and George Steinbrenner were all debaters.
Oh, it says Doug Costas. I don't think Bob Costas pulled out.
Okay. So Paul McGuire, George Steinbrenner, debaters. Regis Philbin.
George Steinbrenner. George Steinbrenner, I'll never forget. He was like the evil owner of the Yankees, right? Of the New York Yankees, and everyone, like, for some reason, he'd do like crazy stuff. And even though the Yankees were successful, everybody hated George Steinbrenner. I'll never forget. He was like the host of Saturday Night Live one time, and they're doing a skit, and they have like, you know, Chris Rock is like Idi Amin, and somebody's like you know, they're like all these different like terrorists that are really bad leaders. Like, I'm Idi Amin, I'm so and so, I'm so and so, and then you have, I'm George Steinbrenner, and it's like an American Express commercial.
Ooh.
It was like the funniest fucking thing. It was hilarious.
I I didn't like George Steinbrenner. I thought it was fucked up when he passed over George Costanza for that one guy getting
that
promotion
right.
on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. That was... Oh, man. Oh, I love Seinfeld in those episodes.
Remember the one where George got locked out of his office and he made his way through the ventilation system and he gets on the phone. Hey, he picks up the phone. Hey, listen, Marla, dear, can you tell Mr. Steinbrenner, I'm in my office!
Remember when he left his car in the parking lot, like a week?
I know, he thought he died. He went and told his parents that he died, and the dad could only bitch about him firing or trading somebody.
I remember when Steinbrenner's grandkids were visiting, and he had built that thing in his desk where he could take a nap. Where you curl up on the floor. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
George.
I remember also he was at one of the Saturday night's main event. He was at ringside. It was a Red Rooster Tito Santana match. And Bobby Heenan was out there. And Tito Santana had the advantage on the Rooster. And Bobby Heenan went over to George and said, what do you do with a guy like this? And Steinberg said, you're firing. Firing.
Oh man, that's funny. But we got four minutes to go, so let me drop off the plugs. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our shows at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. To check out angrymarks.com, you can always listen to our show at blogtalkradio.com/Contrer and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo. So please retweet our links on Twitter and on Facebook, and I think that's it.
And you can follow me on Twitter. I am at Proper Jam. That's P-R-O-P-E-R-J-A-M. And got some new shirts coming out for One Brian Alvarez. They'll be out, I think they're going to be start selling this weekend. So make sure you jump on that and get them while they're hot. And, yeah.
And I get them at cost, right?
We'll talk offline. And Dazza and Sandman, thank you for all you do. You'll be getting one of those in the mail very soon.
Go to YouTube.com/Contrer. Just this week I put up some I got like 17 clips of Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon jibber jabbering with each other on primetime wrestling. So if anybody wants to check that out, pretty cool.
And just to finish up this WrestleMania, Alex Trebek was your ring announcer, Marla Maples was your timekeeper, and Ed's favorite country singer and star, Willie Nelson, was the vocalist.
God, he was dressed so absurd, it wasn't even funny. He
had
a fake title belt around his waist. He had a WrestleMania t-shirt on. He had a Macho Man bandana on his head, and he had Bret Hart sunglasses on. He looked like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, but he was awesome.
Probably because he was
hot. Willie Nelson. I mean, he can wear that shit. I can't. Marla Maples, that's the one that that Donald Trump cheated on his wife with, right?
That sounds right.
Sure.
Not 100%, but that sounds right.
Yep. Hey, banger.
Something like that.
On the disc.
Well, before we go, Craig, do you have any parting words or anything you want to talk about before we go?
No, I can't think of anything. There's a ROH iPay-per-view on tomorrow. If you're still following that, pretty good deal for your money, $15 to check out the iPay-per-view at ROH-Wrestling.com.
Cool. Contreras, do you have anything else you want to talk about before we go?
No, I'm fixing to go watch Dexter. He's on the trail of the Trinity Killer, and I got to see what happens.
What are you going to watch?
Dexter.
Dexter.
Oh, Dexter. I've never watched Dexter.
It's an awesome show. I got this on Showtime on demand, so I can go back and watch all of them. So that's what I've been doing.
That's cool. That's cool.
I'd like to share this real quick. Larry the Cable Guy just tweeted, did you know you can buy generic Viagra? It's just duct tape and a breadstick.
What does it have to do with cable?
That's Larry the Cable Guy.
Who's that?
You're kidding, right?
Someone used to be like his biggest fan.
I don't know. I've never heard of him.
Okay.
I'm a lot more sophisticated than what Ed thinks.
I know.
If you say so. But I guess I'll end the show with just basically want to say a big fuck you to the pizza machine that highly offended me. And the next time I see you, I'm going to kick your ass, you gay bastard.
DeanBiggity.com, everyone. Down six, by the way. Down six.
Bye.
But, I'm looking for the theme music, so hold on. Everybody come back next week, and we will be doing, I guess, part three of the show and talk about some more WrestleManias. And if I could find this goddamn theme music, I could end the show here. And for some fucking reason, I can't find it. Why can't I find it? Oh, there it is.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man!
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the mansion shit! Let's go hook him up!
Oh! Here, about our
I would have dog you until I wear your Texas ass out there today. The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.